CMDA Matters is made possible by members like us. I'm Blake Westra, a dentist from Illinois, and I have been a member of CMDA for many years. I hope you enjoy today's program.
Welcome back to CMDA Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Chupp, the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. And today I'm going to be talking about the coronavirus outbreak. Just before I get to that interview, this past weekend I was in Dallas, Texas at the first ever Rite of Conscience and Cultural Change in Medicine conference. This conference or summit was the result of our partnership with Dallas Theological Seminary and the Christian Legal Society. I really wish you could have been there, because this conference addressed many of the most important issues related to conscience and healthcare that we are facing today. Now, the good news is that the plenary and breakout speakers were recorded, so you will have the opportunity to hear for yourself these talks in just a couple of months. We have a big announcement coming at our CMDA National Convention April 16th through the 19th near downtown Cincinnati, and we will be unveiling a new learning management system which will provide online continuing education free to all of our members. Today I'm going to be talking with a guest about the coronavirus outbreak. Now, I realize this story seems to be at the top of the hour news in every major news update, but one of our members, Dr. Stephen Koh, contacted me a couple of weeks ago, and honestly, he challenged me and CMDA to be part of the COVID-19 discussion. In that interview, you're going to discover how the largest Christian Missionary Alliance church in Manhattan, New York, and a witch doctor in Taiwan in the late 1800s and the COVID-19 outbreak somehow all relate to my guest's life story. Reverend Stephen Koh has 4 degrees as he serves as the senior pastor of the New York Chinese Alliance Church in New York City, New York. He's an ordained Christian and Missionary Alliance pastor. He's passionate about evangelism and global health missions and holistic ministry as exemplified by the life of Jesus Christ. In addition to seminary training, Dr. Koh's healthcare specialties include pediatrics, preventive medicine, and public health. You know, he's currently serving as the adjunct professor at the Alliance Theological Seminary, where he enjoys teaching each week. Prior to teaching and being a pastor, he actually served as the global health professor at Boston University's School of Public Health and as a medical officer for the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. He's worked extensively in Africa and Southeast Asia on diseases of epidemic potential, helping low and low middle income countries implement their national public health programs. He encourages individuals, especially millennials at this time, to embrace evangelism while galvanizing faith-based organizations to action. He enjoys helping individuals flourish in their faith, mentoring church leaders, and teaching seminary and graduate students. Now let's get right to that interview with a very special guest, Dr. Stephen Koh. Dr. Koh, you sort of pinged me last week and said, hey, Mike, CMDA probably should be thinking about leaning in to the coronavirus outbreak and potential pandemic is what you use. So I want to welcome you to the program and thank you for pinging me, because it's had me thinking a whole lot more about coronavirus.
You're welcome, Mike. I'm delighted to be here today with you and also to talk about COVID-19.
Unpack what you shared in that Christianity Today article where you said, Jesus calls us to be his hands, feet, and voice to those who suffer illness, and that instead of running away, we should move toward the ailing with the gospel. Can you unpack that for us?
Yeah, I'd love to, Mike. Really, in times of crisis, Christians were called to stand in solidarity instead of being manipulated by stigma. You know, we really need to provide compassion instead of cowering in fear. And we as Christian healthcare providers, we can rely on sound theology, science, and public health instead of catering to news and social media. You know, in Matthew 8, 1 through 3, Mike, we learn about the character of Jesus. When he came down from the mountain, great crowds followed him. And behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, if you will, make me clean." And Jesus then stretched out his hands and touched him, saying, "I will, be clean." And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. Mike, leprosy is a debilitating long-term illness affecting the nerve, skin, eyes, and nose. And with early diagnosis, we can now treat it and cure it. But it was once one of the most feared and devastating illnesses in antiquity. And lepers were typically quarantined and ostracized by the general public. But what you see here, Mike, is that Jesus doesn't run from the leper. He reaches out his hand to heal him. He could have quickly dealt with this man without contact, yet by risking his own health, he exhibited a powerful image of love. He not only risked contagion, but also ritual defilement from the unclean man. The religious leaders would have railed at the prospect of approaching this leper, but instead he healed with both his voice and hands, answering the leper's call with, "I am willing." And so, Mike, we as Christian healthcare providers, we shouldn't be afraid of those who are sick with COVID-19. Instead, we need to draw near when they are most vulnerable. Christ seeks an undivided heart coupled with our voice, hands, and feet. He modeled that mercy, grace, and love for the least of these so that we might find the courage to follow in his footsteps. And for our particular example, it was a couple weeks ago that I came into our staff meeting. We have seven pastors at the New York Chinese Alliance Church in Manhattan. And the first thing that several of the staff said was, "We need to cancel our meeting tonight with the NYU international students returning from China." And a secondary question was whether or not we should change the way we do communion on Sundays. And I quickly realized that our pastoral staff was sort of stigmatized and really polarized by fear at the time. And so this got me thinking a lot about what we should do as a church and really as a body of Christ to lean into this.
So your background, you worked with and for the CDC in the past. When were you actually employed by the CDC?
I was a CDC medical officer in the early 2010 or 11 era. And during that time, I worked on a number of diseases of epidemic potential globally, including Ebola and meningitis, among other diseases. I continued this work at Boston University in the School of Public Health as a global health professor, and really worked with many national governments in Southeast Asia and Africa on their national public health plans such as hepatitis C and hepatitis B.
I want to get back to the coronavirus outbreak, but I don't want to miss the opportunity. What led to your transition to full-time ministry at the Alliance Church? I know you're teaching a professor still, but what led to that transition as a medical officer, public health expert with the CDC, to now being heading up a pastoral staff at the Alliance Church there in New York City?
Mike, since the late missionary George Leslie Mackay arrived in Taiwan in 1871, there's always been a generational calling to full-time ministry for our family. Affectionately known as the Black-Bearded Dentist, Mackay once extracted more than 10,000 teeth in his lifetime.
Wow.
And in 1873, Mackay met a local witch doctor stricken with illness. And with no remedy in sight, that witch doctor approached Mackay in desperation for healing. And through this encounter, he offered more than just medication, but also spiritual healing through faith in Jesus Christ. And that witch doctor's entire family was baptized. And that was really the beginning of the Taiwanese Christian Church. Mike, that witch doctor's last name was Ko.
Oh, wow.
He was my great-great-grandfather, yes.
Wow.
And for the last decade and a half, I've dedicated my life to global health and pediatrics while spreading the gospel intermittently. But in the last few years, God called me to sacrifice everything at the altar. He asked if I'd be willing to give up the prestige of teaching, the respect of the academy, and the salary of a physician. It was really an Abraham and Isaac moment, and the answer was a resounding yes. But ironically, after yielding to God's will, he's not yet finished using my background and expertise in all this industry, even with COVID-19. And so now it's just a focus on ministry and evangelism with global health missions at the periphery.
And I can see why Christianity Today would be interested in someone with your background and powerful story to be writing and speaking truth into our culture and into the evangelical church. Well, let's get back onto the coronavirus topic. You had shared, and I was listening, watching the President Trump's press conference last night on the issue with leaders from CDC and NIH, and it seems like the world is definitely focused. This is not just CMDA matters. This is global, certainly global matters. I wanted to ask you, when is the last time a pandemic occurred in our world?
First, we need to define the word pandemic.
Yes.
Pandemic comes from the Greek word pandemos. Pan meaning everyone and demos meaning population. And so though widespread global transmission is universally agreed upon, some would argue that you need number one, sustained person-to-person spread, number two, significant morbidity and mortality, and number three, again, widespread geographic occurrence. You know, sometimes we're really arguing over semantics when discussing the terms epidemic or pandemic. Given what I just shared, I'd probably argue that at its peak from 2005 to 2012, HIV and AIDS was the last pandemic, resulting in, I think, an estimated 36 million deaths. And before that, arguably, the flu pandemic of 1968, resulting in roughly a million deaths. You could argue, Mike, that Ebola is potentially considered a pandemic, but it's largely been confined to West Africa, so I'll define it as an epidemic for now.
Okay. Now, in terms of the level of contagion, you had shared with me some statistics, and I'm not an epidemiologist. My background is in surgery. So could you explain some basic facts about COVID-19 that you helped me to understand in the last few days in terms of its transmissibility and what is being looked at as possible models for coronavirus, COVID-19, here in the United States?
Mike, we're really on the cusp of a COVID pandemic. There's a reported 82,000 cases globally, roughly 2,800 deaths, and now we're seeing COVID-19 on six different continents. Certainly, a majority of the cases were originally from China, where there's arguably been an underreporting of cases with ever-changing case definitions. In the U.S. alone, as you likely heard from the press conference yesterday evening, outside of the Diamond Princess cases, I believe there's 42, and those repatriated from Wuhan, we have 15 confirmed cases in the U.S., 12 returning from China. But the one California case that was reported yesterday likely indicates the first occurrence in the United States with no history of travel to China or exposure to others. Now, CDC is currently ramping up COVID-19 surveillance through our existing flu system. And phase one, as I recall, included testing individuals negative for flu at public health labs in five major cities, LA, San Francisco, Seattle, Chicago, and New York City. The second phase is then expansion to other sites across the nation. Now, to your question, COVID-19 is highly infectious. It has an R-naught between 2 and 3. Now, what is R-naught? R-naught is the basic reproduction number, or the average number of people who will become sick from a single infected individual. An R-naught of 3 means, on average, every case will transmit the disease to 3 people. And in general, an R-naught greater than 1 means that the disease will keep spreading, mm-hmm. while an R-naught less than 1 means the outbreak will likely teeter out. And so the WHO and several academics have estimated an R-naught to be between 2 and 3 for COVID-19. In comparison to SARS, this was about the same, SARS being 2 to 5, seasonal flu being about 1.3. and measles being highly contagious at about 12 to 16.
Wow.
I will mention, however, that COVID-19 likely has a much lower mortality, with the case fatality rate, or CFR, estimated at about 0.7%. This is really on the order of flu. And let's not forget that flu kills you know, anywhere between 30,000 to 60,000 people in the U.S. alone annually. And so the definition of case fatality rate, or CFR, is the number of deaths over the number diagnosed over a specific time. You know, if you compare it to SARS or MERS, Mike, SARS had a greater CFR, roughly 9.6%, and MERS was 34.4% by WHO estimates. And so I want to highlight the fact that the majority of COVID-19 cases are very mild, just like the common cold that you or I have experienced this winter.
Yes.
And only a small minority are severe, you know, maybe 14% with shortness of breath, low O2 sats, pneumonia. And then maybe, you know, 5% or less are critical with signs of respiratory failure, septic shock, or multiple organ failure. Maybe ARDS as well. You know, your question in regards to transmission, there's a lot that we don't know about COVID-19, Mike. Its viral characteristics are still being investigated by scientists and public health experts. Right now, it is known to be a beta coronavirus, similar to MERS and SARS, and all three likely have origins within bats. In fact, sequences from some of the U.S. patients suggest a single emergence from an animal reservoir. Transmission from typical COVID-19 occurs like the common flu, primarily via respiratory droplets from infected persons via coughing or sneezing.
So comments that I heard the NIH director making last night were that the work is being done, phase one on vaccine, and it's probably going to be 9 months to a year before that becomes available. And that may seem like, wow, that's not going to be helpful. But the NIH director was saying that there's likely to be cycles, and that maybe even next year or in the next 12 or 24 months, that even if the pandemic eases and goes away, that it could recur.
Yeah, that's very astute. And I think various different CDC staff believe the same, that potentially COVID-19 will be with us for the long haul. You know, it remains to be seen. Only time will tell. But that is correct. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases of NIH, mentioned last night that there's really several pharmaceutical companies working on vaccines. And to be sure, it's an incredible how quickly these vaccine trials are beginning. In fact, I think Moderna Therapeutics from Massachusetts has already shipped the first batches of vaccine to NIH. And Dr. Fauci said yesterday that the vaccine may be ready for human testing as early as April.
Wow.
You know, in regards to therapeutics, remdesivir, which is a Gilead nucleotide analog that has broad spectrum antiviral activity against Ebola, MERS, and SARS, is currently within phase three trials, sort of an accelerated course, looking at some of the Chinese patients that have been stricken with COVID-19. How does it work? It's an adenosine nucleotide analog that really confuses RNA polymerase and evades proofreading of viroxoribonuclease, decreasing RNA production. But, you know, Mike, that's all in the future. And for now, I would like to focus on prevention that to this point have been highly successful in the United States.
What has been successful? I mean, what are your thoughts about some of the prevention measures that are being implemented by U.S. officials, border screening? How effective do you think those measures are?
Yeah, first of all, if I may, Mike, churches and Christians have a unique role in helping communities to raise awareness while following public health guidelines. We can really disseminate sound recommendations while helping allay concerns of our anxious members. By announcing key recommendations during worship through social media and traditional messaging, churches can provide a safe place with peace, pacify worry, and offer hope. In regards to prevention, you know, it's not as exciting as taking a groundbreaking medication like remdesivir or vaccine. But the reality is that washing hands with soap and water is highly effective if you do it right. Did you know, Mike, that we touch our face with our hands, you know, typically our nose, eyes, and mouth 15 to 23 times an hour.
Wow.
And then we also touch, you know, subway poles, handrails, grocery carts, and we shake hands with others. But, you know, when we do wash our hands, you know, I want to emphasize that we need to wash correctly with soap and water and for, you know, a decent amount of time. You know, think of singing happy birthday while you're washing your hands. Ironically, my son does this, but when he washes, he only washes his fingers. And it's been shown by studies that, you know, your thumb between your fingers and your wrist are, you know, areas that are typically missed. And so we should also cover our coughs while being careful not to touch our mucous membranes with unwashed hands. And of course, it's sort of common sense, but, you know, we should stay home when feeling ill and avoid those who are actively symptomatic.
Well, with a background in surgery, I don't know how many times a day I end up washing my hands before and after patient encounters, as you have as well. But the hand sanitizers, I would assume that you might want to buy stock in these companies, given what you've just shared, trying to increase compliance with same thing for the hand sanitizers, the little bottles that we can buy in the drugstore. Would you agree?
Correct. The hand sanitizers. In fact, we have hand sanitizers at our church. So for healthcare providers and, you know, maybe pastors are listening, this might be a great opportunity to install hand sanitizers around your church. We have them next to each elevator and bathroom, but I think that would be terrific. You know, I'll also mention, since you asked the question, other potential prevention and containment measures, which we see happening already, would be social distancing. And so if widespread community transmission begins to occur in the United States, you know, really other non-pharmaceutical interventions will slowly be implemented. Social distancing is really the term applied to actions taken by public health officials to stop or slow down the spread of highly contagious diseases. And social distancing is most effective when infections are transmitted via droplets, as COVID-19 is. Some social distancing measures have already been enacted, such as quarantine of contacts and suspected cases, and also travel restrictions, as you mentioned. Others might maybe forthcoming, really depending on how this COVID-19 scenario unfolds. This may include school closures, work closures, or even cancellation of mass gatherings, such as church services. You know, in regards to closing borders, it's really an unprecedented step that the United States State Department and Health and Human Services and CDC has taken in terms of social distancing. But undoubtedly, it's had an effect to buy us more time. But the reality, Mike, is that if we are seeing COVID-19 on six continents, you know, at some level, we won't be able to completely stem the tide. In regard to border screening, we're able to help identify those with symptomatic cases of COVID-19. But, you know, with widespread community transmission, individuals can still be symptomatic, Mike. In fact, symptoms typically occur as few as 2 days or as long as 14 days after exposure, you know, sort of in line with the typical incubation period of MERS.
What about recrudescence? I just heard this morning, I don't know if it was on Fox News or one of the other major broadcast networks, that there were some cases of patients improving, getting over, and then, boom, sick again, also with the COVID-19.
Yeah, as I mentioned, Mike, I think there's a lot that we don't know yet about COVID-19, about the pathophysiology, and even about the treatment. You know, as I mentioned before, most cases, 80%, are mild, and they get better on their own. But, you know, that 15-20% of cases are severe and sometimes critical. You know, as we talked before, sometimes you can get this ARDS type of syndrome. Mm-hmm. And the reality is we don't know how to treat it. Some individuals around the world and in China are using steroids. But, you know, we need clinical trials, and I believe there are some that are starting to see the efficacy of treatment for ARDS syndrome with COVID infection and treating with steroids. But the reality is we just don't know right now. You know, there are some individuals that have had positive tests and then negative and positive. And so, you know, for these individuals, I personally believe maybe it is a lab testing issue. I can't say I know for sure. We don't have that data. But COVID-19 is typically diagnosed with RT-PCR, reverse transcriptase PCR. And sometimes you can have false negatives secondary to laboratory error or insufficient amounts of viral material collected from the patient. This was quite an issue when I was working on HCV and HBV globally in sub-Saharan Africa and Nigeria, Ethiopia, as well as Rwanda. You know, we would have a lot of issues with different testing kits and reagents, some that may not have undergone quality control, QA and QC. So, you know, in general, you can get false negatives also occurring in patients that tested too early in the course of infection when, you know, really there's an insufficient amount of virus detected. There's different limits of detection for different tests, and it's partially based on instruments as well. You know, recently, CDC even reported that some of the reagents for their testing kits that were distributed resulted in inconsistent results, secondary to problematic reagents. So it could be a lab testing issue, Mike. I'm not sure. But it could also be, you know, the nature of COVID-19, the pathophysiology. If I were to speculate, I would say that COVID-19 is likely not biphasic. What does that mean?
Sure. Like, help us understand.
Similar to a biphasic disease, maybe the best example is anthrax, where the disease looks like it's gone before potentially recurring. If I were to speculate, I wouldn't imagine COVID-19 is biphasic based on the characteristics that are similar to MERS and SARS. You know, maybe, perhaps if you're infected with COVID-19, it can remain dormant, but then you could get an exacerbation as it finds its way into the lungs. But the reality is, I don't know, Mike, and I think research is still needed in this area, and we'll know in time.
How can our listeners get information that's up to date that will help them make decisions about international travel?
The best way to stay informed on international travel recommendations and precautions would be, in my opinion, the CDC website. They constantly update COVID-19 related information, including that for travelers. And this includes warning levels. Warning level 3 means to avoid non-essential travel. And this recommendation is currently in place for China and South Korea. Warning level 2 means that older adults and those with chronic medical conditions should consider postponing non-essential travel. There's a warning level 2 for Iran, Italy, and Japan. And then finally, a watch level 1 means that you shouldn't necessarily cancel your travel, but utilize usual precautions. And that's the case for Hong Kong. You know, the CDC website is obviously also a wealth of other information.
Yes, I've been there.
Current federal recommendations, I'm sure you have. But you can also go to the official State Department website for traveler information as well.
Is the watch level 3 the highest? Is there another level 4 where it's just no go, period?
No, watch level 3 is the highest to avoid non-essential travels, as I understand.
What parting words would you give for all of us who want to represent Christ faithfully in terms of how this might very well be God giving us a gift of an opportunity to advance his kingdom?
Christian healthcare providers, we shouldn't be afraid of those who are sick of COVID-19. Instead, we need to draw near to them when they are most vulnerable. Christ seeks an undivided heart coupled with our voices, hands, and feet. He modeled this grace, mercy, and love at the foot of the cross. It doesn't mean that we are to be reckless in our care of the ill. Even in Old Testament times, public health measures were inherent within Levitical law. By heeding public health recommendations while caring for the sick, we can demonstrate the love of Christ while ensuring the health of the public. You know, Christ always challenges us to leave our doors open to those who knock, Mike. This may mean taking precautionary measures and consideration for public health recommendations, but it should never result in ostracizing those with the desire to meet the risen King. Instead of running away, we should always move towards the ailing with the gospel in hand, Mike.
Thank you, Dr. Stephen Coe, for joining us today on CMDA Matters. I have a feeling with your background, experience, and connections, you're going to be a popular guy We're grateful that you had some time in the middle of your day to join us and talk to us a little bit more. And as this evolves, who knows, we may double back and check with you, if you don't mind, Dr. Koh, and to give us an update in coming weeks.
No problem at all, Mike. I'm delighted to speak with you today. God bless.
Well, you may have felt, oh no, another interview about COVID-19 when you saw the title of the CMDA Matters. But I hope you'll agree with me and are grateful for this specific exhortation from Dr. Koh, and trust that you learned a few new facts about the COVID-19 outbreak from the perspective of a pastor and public health officer who worked with the CDC. Just to tell you how coronavirus has impacted us at CMDA, just today we had two tours going to Italy in May, and CDC announced that Northern Italy had a level 3, in other words, don't travel unless absolutely necessary. And so we've notified those trip participants, and we know they're disappointed, but we just felt this was the wisest move to protect those participants, and we're giving them opportunities to reschedule in 2021, God willing, for another Italy tour. You know, I've been monitoring the CDC website on coronavirus, and I do think that website is a very helpful resource for us as healthcare professionals. You can get the best information possible as we prepare ourselves for questions that I'm sure patients and community leaders alike are asking you now and in the coming weeks. A simple web search using CDC coronavirus guidelines for healthcare professionals will get you started on that site. All kinds of information that I found even today. Well, we want to keep making CMDA Matters as beneficial to you, our listeners, as possible. I'd love to hear from you and get your ideas maybe for future interviews that would be especially helpful for you. Feel free to share your ideas or your suggestions. Just email me using the email address executive@cmda.org, executive@cmda.org. One last very important matter as we wrap up this week's program. If you are a medical student about to match in this very important month of March, or know of med students in that process, we would invite you to visit our match day portal, cmda.org/matchday, with a hyphen, match-day. You will have a chance to share with us where you matched and to let CMDA come alongside you to pray, encourage, and provide some resources to help connect you to CMDA in your new residency location. Well, until next week, what matters to you matters to CMDA, and CMDA Matters. Have an awesome day.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.